Please pray with me. God of life, send your spirit upon us who are gathered here. Bless your word in its speaking, in its hearing, as it stirs within our hearts, and most especially, bless your word in its working in the world. Amen. Well, Moses might be the Bible's first superhero. Don't get me wrong. There are some other great characters who come along before Moses. But Moses is the guy who goes up against the baddest bad guy, wins freedom for the Hebrews, and leads them into the promised land, all the while performing miraculous feats and talking to God. Now, if that's not a superhero, I don't know what is. And Moses has all of the key character traits for a really compelling superhero: a strong sense of justice, supernatural powers, a clear sense of mission. He has the right cast of characters, a people in distress, a villainous opponent, and even a trusty sidekick in his co-leader brother, Aaron. Better yet, Moses has a slightly murky past. Now, I don't want to give away the story, so I'll just say he had to go on the lam for a while, okay? And like all superheroes, Moses has a great origin story, which is the subject of today's reading. For those of you not in the know, in comic book speak, a hero's origin story is just what it sounds like. It's the story of how our hero came to be who he or she is. Heroes tend to become super in one of a few ways. Through some kind of accident, like a chemical spill or being bitten by a radioactive spider, maybe. Through the hero's own ingenuity and resourcefulness, like Iron Man or Batman with their high-end gadgets. Or, rarely, the hero is born with special skills and capabilities. Just think of Wonder Woman or Superman or the X-Men. Superheroes are usually tragic figures. Maybe they're orphans, or they've experienced some other painful loss, or they're social outcasts. Moses, like any good superhero, is very tragic. His parents are Hebrew slaves living under the oppressive thumb of the Egyptian pharaoh, and life has become very difficult. Before this pharaoh, the Hebrews had been welcome guests in Egypt, neighbors and co-workers who enjoyed Egyptian hospitality out of respect for their ancestor Joseph. Pharaoh has apparently forgotten this history and sees only that the Hebrews have become very numerous. In his fear of the foreigner, he has used his platform to paint the Hebrews as would-be terrorists. His campaign against the Hebrews has reached a crazed zenith with the wholesale murder of baby boys. It has been suggested by some biblical scholars that the Pharaoh was foolish. I mean, if you want to get rid of people who can multiply, shouldn't you eliminate the girls? But I don't think the Pharaoh was trying to exterminate the Hebrews. I think he was trying to break them. Knowing that the Hebrews trace their lineage through males, he was using the children to disintegrate the Hebrew family structure and take away their hopes. Taking away their children became the method by which the Pharaoh discouraged the movement of their parents. Except for the actions of some subversive midwives, Moses might not have survived childbirth at all. But having survived, his parents have a new problem. How do you hide a vigorous child from your murderous neighbors? I mean, this is a real pickle, folks. Their neighbors have instructions to throw any Hebrew boy into the river. So Moses' mother decides to beat them to the punch. Except instead of drowning Moses, she gently places him in a basket. The Hebrew word here is the same one used for Noah's ark. She places him in this little ark to keep him afloat until he either dies from exposure or, by the grace of God, is rescued by someone else. To keep him at home means certain death. To abandon him in his tiny ark gives him a chance, a small one, perhaps, but still a chance. So far, Moses' origins are appropriately tragic. But here is where the story takes a sharp turn from our favorite comics. In almost every superhero's origin story, whatever the circumstances of their birth, there is some galvanizing event that pulls them out of obscurity and thrusts them into the role of a hero. It's often a single event that turns a single ordinary person into a single superhero. In this story, the galvanizing event is a baby's watery rescue. However, the superhero cape doesn't fall on Moses, but rather on the unlikely dynamic duo of his sister and the Pharaoh's daughter. These women are the ones who use their superpowers to rescue Moses, in this story, the innocent victim. So let's talk about their superpowers for a minute. The Pharaoh's daughter wields empathy and compassion. Now, I imagine, prior to that fateful day when she decided to have a bath in the river, her father's zero-tolerance policy on Hebrew baby boys was just a policy, an abstract concept with very little meaning to her. She probably saw it in her morning papyrus, you know, a small article sandwiched between a report on the crop yields and, like, you know, a feature about her father's latest building project. It probably didn't haunt her waking hours or take up any space in conversations with her girlfriends. But standing there in that river, vulnerable and shivering, the Pharaoh's daughter faces reality. Her father's abstract policy is made concrete in the form of a tiny crying baby. I recently heard a story about a small coastal town in Washington State where everyone was in favor of a crackdown on illegal immigration. That is, until coworkers and neighbors started to disappear. In a school district of fewer than 1,000 students, 25 have vanished, either into the homes of distant relatives or back to the countries where their parents have been deported. For them, the deported are no longer an abstraction, anonymous other people who can be turned into monsters and animals through political speech. They're a beloved substitute teacher, a friendly neighbor, co-workers in the fishery. They are people who are respected and rooted in that community. Last summer, my friend Megan welcomed a mother and son into her home while they're going through the asylum process. Now, when she reads about children being separated from their parents, she immediately thinks of the mother and her spunky four-year-old who have become such an important part of her family. She recently shared a reflection about this little boy, saying, "Little D is funny, smart, joyful, and tenacious. He and his mama have brought so much light and life into my world. And yet, that little guy has seen so much trauma, chaos, and pain already in his 4 years. Through it all, his one constant has been his mama. If he had been separated from her when they crossed into the U.S., it would have irreparably damaged his spirit." She wrote, "It makes me sick to my stomach to even think about it." For Megan, for the people in Washington State, and for the Pharaoh's daughter, it just becomes impossible to hold refugees and immigrants at arm's length, to pretend that their very existence is a threat when confronted with their cries in the river. Hearing their cries activates the empathy superpower. It sparks compassion. It motivates them to action. And what about Moses' sister? The first superpower she activates is simply showing up and waiting. Something terrible could have happened to Moses, or she might have been discovered hiding there in the reeds. It was probably very scary to sit there and wait, not knowing what would happen or what she might see. Sometimes, don't we avoid people who are going through a hard time because we're afraid we might see or hear something that will make us feel sad or angry or even just uncomfortable? I mean, we love to fill silences, don't we? We are so afraid to go to those scary places with people and just wait. Now, when I say we, I don't mean you here at Faith, because showing up for people is one of Faith's greatest superpowers. Since I first arrived here in 2011, I have seen you show up for one another again and again. I have experienced personally and witnessed how you show up for one another when you're grieving, even when you're not sure what to say. You're not afraid to get in the reeds and be with people in their darkest times. Showing up may not seem like a superpower to you, but trust me when I tell you that for the person clinging to the sides of the basket, it is nothing short of a miracle. When you do that, when you just show up and listen and wait, God is there with you, even when it's not always obvious. And often, while we're patiently listening, we will hear God speaking to us, showing us a path forward that we never expected. Miriam, because that's who we're assuming the sister in the story is, shows up for Moses. And because she is there, patiently listening, she sees an unexpected path. Miriam is moved to step out from the reeds and initiate an encounter with a very powerful woman. The power imbalance in this story is staggering. I mean, among women in this culture, none is lower than a Hebrew woman slave, and none is higher than the Pharaoh's daughter. But here comes Miriam anyway, making a proposal to the Pharaoh's daughter that places Moses back into his mother's arms, and in a way that guarantees his safety. Finally, Miriam's greatest asset is the one thing that simultaneously makes her the most vulnerable: her identity as a Hebrew woman. I mean, who better to find a Hebrew nursemaid, am I right? It's perfect. It's too perfect. And this is how we know that God, who is never once mentioned in this story, is at work in Miriam and the Pharaoh's daughter. The Hebrews are suffering at the hands of a cruel oppressor. The Pharaoh rips babies from the arms of mother who are already desperate, who have nothing else but their children. God reunites child with mother by creating an unlikely alliance between two unequal women and activating their superpowers. This rights the wrong, but God's justice is not yet satisfied. Later, Moses will receive his superpowers, not from an insect bite or a genetic mutation, but directly from the great I Am speaking through a burning bush. Just as God gives Miriam and the Pharaoh's daughter what they need to secure a future for the baby Moses, God will give the man Moses what he needs to smash the entire system of oppression, free God's people from the death of slavery, and secure a future for them. God's justice demands nothing less. God works with the superpowers we already have and puts them to use to do God's work in the world. So I'm sensing a little skepticism. superpowers? Really, Jen? Isn't that a stretch? I mean, compassion, empathy, cleverness, patience, courage. Aren't these traits that humans already have at their disposal? Well, yes, this is true. That's a fact. But because we believe in the incarnate God who put on flesh and walked among us, we also know that God uses every one of these same characteristics to bring about God's justice. Jesus showed cleverness, expertly reinterpreting the law to prioritize meeting human needs over satisfying the needs of the state. Time and again, Jesus showed compassion and courage, healing the sick and blind even when it was against the law to do so. Jesus was so committed to shining a light on the sin of injustice that it took him all the way to the cross. Out of the reeds of that death on the cross, through Christ's resurrection and ascension, God created a bold new pathway for us, one that leads to unity with God for the sake of the world. I mean, talk about an unequal power balance, right? We are not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal, and yet God uses us as his hands and his feet to meet human need and oppose injustice. And not just our hands and feet, but our whole selves, even the parts of us that make us outsiders among our fellow human beings. So today, I invite you, dear friends, to place yourselves beside the river, to settle in among the reeds and listen, to allow yourselves to become vulnerable to the cries of God's children who are adrift and drowning. What path is God opening up for you to follow? Which powers will God activate in you for the sake of the world? Whatever they are, I know that God will make them super. Amen.